the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Johnny Donovan, thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard the John Gambling Show, Friday edition with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Nice to see you again. We've had a three-week hiatus.
Three-week hiatus. You had a good time?
I had a wonderful time, and you in California with the governor?
Well, yeah, I'll talk about that. The last two Fridays, sadly, had you been here, I would have had to cancel because both Fridays we had funerals.
The first one we missed was because of the firemen.
In 3 days, we had a sanitation worker on Thursday, a firefighter, a rookie whose father I happen to know by accident, on Friday, and a lieutenant on Saturday. And then this past week, there was a sanitation worker who dropped out of a heart attack on the job. So I wouldn't have been here anyways. But anyways.
But anyway, we're glad we were back together here.
Glad we're back together. And I got home at 4:30 this morning, so I'm a little bit groggy. But, you know, I'm here, John.
You made the bell. I have to say that you are a trooper indeed, and I appreciate it.
I can just tell you one thing that I thought about in the plane on the way back. When I get done with my 8 years, I'd like to take a vacation for a week. It would really be nice.
It's been a long while. You and Governor Schwarzenegger talking about the environment. You've also talked about New York working towards a greener environment.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, Schwarzenegger, who is, you know, came into office as a conservative Republican, has taken on a lot of big industries that don't like him out there trying to do something about the environment. And my hat's off to him. Our problems are somewhat different, and we are trying to get a handle on what we can do as a city. We're about to announce the total amount of emissions that the city's trucks and city agencies create. 6 months from now, we'll have a study of the entire city. You have to have the data before you know how to go attack it. And this is a problem that the city can't do everything, but we can do something. There's no reason why we can't have a greener environment. Now, the people would say, oh, well, this environmental stuff is bad for business. I don't think that's true. I think people want to breathe clean air and drink clean water and eat fresh food. And that's one of the things that makes this an attractive city. If you remember, I think it was Lindsay who said he wouldn't breathe any air he couldn't see. I mean, it was a cute line, but, you know, that's not the way people want to live. And companies recognize it's good for business, so it changes things. I don't know that it makes business some things more expensive, but the benefit of it is you'll live longer.
It has been an obvious benefit since the 1960s when I was growing up in the air here in New York, where you lived in Boston at the time, was not good. It is significantly better than it was.
Oh, absolutely.
Significantly.
We can make it better, and I think that's why our economy's thriving for a lot of these things. Some people say you shouldn't be focusing on these things, but in the end, people want to work here. Companies want to locate here because it's a healthy environment, it's a clean environment, it's a safe environment, our schools are getting better. All of these things contribute to the reason New York City is, at the moment, doing good, as they say.
This initiative that you're talking about, and we'll announce the specifics of in how long a time?
It's all coming out. I mean, some of the studies we announced that we've got a group together, and Columbia University is pro bono providing some guidance. And
so it's a ways down the road.
Well, you know, it's always a battle. You're always going to have a battle. China is building a 1 megawatt power plant every single week.
It's amazing.
And they're coal-fired and contribute to the environment.
You've been to Beijing.
Problems.
You can't see the building next door.
Can't see the building next door. And that gets into the air, and it's a problem for the whole world. That does not mean that we shouldn't do our part of cutting back. Number one, it's whatever we cut back is less than it goes into the atmosphere. And two, maybe we can be a role model. You know, the smoking thing really has become, for all the criticisms we got, you know,
a notch in the belt. It's a notch in your belt.
Yeah, it's that's another part of the environment.
The proposal that will come out is just for the cities. It would be the police cars. It would be the city buildings.
Yeah, but remember,
is that a correct assumption?
Yes, but New York is so big and has such an influence. If we do things, lots of other places will copy it.
All right, but you're not necessarily going to have any sort of laws or that business
no,
the
you
public
want,
need to do X,
well,
Y,
they,
and Z.
Listen, there are pollution laws that you can't do, and the city can be a leader by making sure its cars and trucks pollute less. Yesterday I visited a fuel cell manufacturer with Schwarzenegger, and it's one of these, you know, Silicon Valley, except that now it's Green Valley kind of investments. And the idea here is that a fuel cell, which could burn natural gas or get some solar power, it stores it and it gives you electricity and produces hydrogen, and the next round of cars will be hydrogen fueled because they don't pollute or don't pollute very much. And, you know, you could have the fuel cell we saw was roughly the size of a parking space. And it could
be a big car.
No. It would provide electricity for 100 homes and produce enough hydrogen to have everybody in those 100 homes have a couple cars. And it would, you know. So that's the technology that's coming down the road. And what I found fascinating in listening to the guy talk about it was he's right. It's the same thing as changing the whole paradigm with cell phones. Today, those old line companies that have all these wires are suffering because people have found a ways around the infrastructure and adopted cell phone technology. Kids today don't bother to, a lot of them don't bother to put phones in when they get an apartment. They just have their cell phone. Well, it's conceivable that all those lines that distribute electricity will go away as well if every neighborhood has its own little generator. Nobody wants to have a power station in their neighborhood, but if it doesn't pollute at all and if it's tiny, sure, why not?
You're exactly right. It's going to be fascinating to see. When I was in Europe last week, at the gas stations, almost all of them in Italy have natural gas pumps because many of the cars run on natural
absolutely.
Gas, diesels.
You take a look, France is almost all of their electricity generation today is nuclear. We sit here getting more and more dependent on foreign oil. We gnash our teeth. We complain. But, you know, we're not really doing anything about getting away from this dependency on foreign oil. We have some ethanol, although there's the business of Congress protecting the corn growers because that by putting tariffs on sugar coming into this country. Sugar can make ethanol that's twice as powerful or efficient as corn-based ethanol. People say, oh, well, let's have wind power. But you ever try to site a windmill? You can see, I don't want that in my view and that sort of thing. Yeah, every one of these alternative power sources have problems.
Your reaction
well.
To Branson's $3 billion to...
I'm not sure exactly what he's doing. I think if I read, he's investing $3 billion in companies that are trying to...
Alternative energies.
Yeah, but so is every other venture capitalist doing it. That's a trend that started a few years ago. They haven't been... The venture capital firms haven't been investing in new internet companies or new chip makers. They've been investing, starting a couple of years ago, in energy sources. That's where everybody thinks the next boom will be. And Branson's getting on board. Like, that's fine. I hope he makes a lot of money. Because if he does, it'll be because those companies produce products that people want. And they'll be environmentally friendly, I hope.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling and you. We'll get back to the mayor in just a second. First break here. Coming right back.
77 WABC.
We are back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg right here at News Talk Radio 77 WABC. Was Hugo Chavez annoyed at you because you weren't in town when he was here?
I don't believe he mentioned my name, which
that
I guess
that was all
is
the
good.
Yelling and screaming was about? He got a bad meal? Didn't have the right bed? What?
Forget about the fact that what you don't want to do is you don't want to do what somebody like that is begging you to do. Make them the headlines another day. My strategy is always just don't mention them. It's the one thing that you can do that really hurts. If you yell at them, it's great. They want that back home. You're building them up. Why would I want to help a guy like that? I don't want to help him at all. But if we don't say anything, it falls on deaf ears. He doesn't get another day. You know, if you criticize me and I shut up, it's a one-day story. If you criticize me and I respond, it's a three-day story. Yours, mine, and then yours again. And then hopefully I've learned my lesson. So my attitude is just don't give somebody – I don't want to fall into the trap – don't respond. Just don't say anything. Now, people find that hard to do. They've got to be on record that they're tough and smart. But all you're doing is helping the other guy who you ostensibly don't want to help.
I thought it was interesting to see who actually stood up and did do the screaming and the criticizing.
I'm not going to criticize anybody else either.
Well, I guess this line of questioning isn't going to go much further, is it?
Well, no, because all you do is you help somebody that you're not trying to help.
Give me your view of the United Nations and the yearly get-together that we see here with the General Assembly.
Diplomacy is second, third, fourth biggest industry in this city. If the UN left, from an economic point of view, it would be a disaster. All these embassies wouldn't be here. They just have consulates. Tens of thousands of people lose their jobs. The trickle-down effect, stores, restaurants, builders, real estate prices, it would be devastating for the city. This is a good business for us. What is said in the UN, I find most of it to be despicable. But whether they say it here or they say it in Bonn, Germany, doesn't change that. Why have the Germans make all the money off them? Why don't we at least get the money?
But on the global issues. I mean,
I'd rather have people talking, even if it is dumb and they don't come to anything, than fighting. I mean, it's kind of hard to argue that there's any great harm coming out of these people acting irrationally, saying dumb things, yelling at us and everybody else. If they want to do it and they're paying our stores and restaurants, I guess I'd prefer they didn't. Say those things, but I'm very much in favor. We want the United Nations to stay here. If they go someplace else, the world is not better off. New York City is worse off.
All right. Were you in California by coincidence with the UN here or by plan?
I don't know whether they scheduled the General Assembly before we did. I can tell you that I took the subway up and down, which I do most days, but particularly this past week, and it made things a lot better.
Some more good news when it comes to crime here in New York City. The numbers continue to drop. Safest city in the United States?
The numbers are better than people realize, because those numbers the FBI put out are the final numbers for 2005. During 2005, crime started to go up elsewhere, has continued to come down here, and we are now the 17th safest city in the country out of the 245 cities of 100,000 population or more. What gives me even more encouragement is in 06, of which we're three quarters of the way through, crime has come down probably another 5% in this city. And it's going up elsewhere in the country.
Yeah, 2.5%,
3%. Yeah, I mean, so this year. So the next statistics we'll see a year from now will make even better reading. Now, any crime is too much, and I don't want crime to go up elsewhere in the country. It's not good for America or for people that live elsewhere. But I just think it shows. Who do you give credit to? Give credit to Kelly and the 35,000 police officers on the beat and all the staff that works in the police department. Give credit to the district attorneys who are helpful. Give credit to the courts. Give credit to probations and corrections. John Feinblatt, our criminal justice coordinator, pulling all that together. Give credit to the public. There's no one person that ever takes all the credit. I take all the blame when things go wrong, and that is my job. But everybody really contributes to this.
I wanted to ask you just that. Do you think that that we are better people, that there are fewer bad guys, or is it just the combination you just described of the whole
synergy?
I think the
funny thing is it's both, because remember, the more crime goes down, the more people come here and go out on the streets. The more people there are on the streets, the less likely somebody is to commit a crime. People tend to commit crime when nobody's watching. So these things, when you get into the cycle of things getting better, you get momentum and you can keep it going. The sad news is, as we saw many decades ago here in the city, when you're on the other side of the curve, people start leaving and expectations go low, go down, and the police get discouraged, and the courts start behaving irrationally, and things go from worse to worse to worse. Right now, they're going from better to better to better, and we've just got to keep our focus.
The economy plays a role in it, too, doesn't it?
John, there's no one of these things that is separate by itself. We are going to have this decade more people move into the city than live in Pittsburgh. It's amazing. But that all fuels the economy. It gives us tax base to hire police officers. Remember, I authorized Kelly to hire another 800 police officers and to put another 400 take them off desk jobs, civilianize those jobs. That's 1,200 more cops in the street. That will help. One of the clear ways to bring down crime is just having more
police presence.
Yeah, and I was in Los Angeles and I was listening to the problems. We're very lucky. We're doing very well
They've
in the city.
They've got some big crime problems.
Every city has problems, including us. Their problems are, Villagrosa is, I think, a smart guy. He's got his hands full. He's going to have a real challenge. I think he's up to it. I really do like the guy. I think he's aggressive and smart and practical.
Did you see the Crane's article? It says they did a survey. 65% of those they interviewed want more services and are willing to pay for them here in the city.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that stuff is how you ask the question. When it comes time, when they get their tax bills, people aren't really thrilled about having their taxes go up.
Oh.
But look, if you want to have more cops, somebody's got to pay for it. If you want more teachers, somebody's got to pay for it. If you want more firefighters, somebody's got to pay for it. If you want more social services or support for the arts or parks or cultural institutions, you know, everything, all of this, there's no free lunch. And, I keep pointing that out. And people say, oh, let's let our children pay for it. We'll borrow money and post and
no,
have I've always described myself as I may be a social liberal, but I'm a fiscal conservative in that we should be if we want something, it's going to cost, and we should look in the mirror. That's who's going to pay for it in the end.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, lots more to go here on the John Gambling Show. Half hour, 10:30 is our time. Fast break for a news update. And George Weber, good weekend. Mr. Mayor, next Friday when we get together, you and I are going to be doing it from the National Museum of the American Indian, and we're going to be opening the Diker Pavilion for the Native Arts and Cultures.
It's a great museum, and it's in a spectacular building, and it's downtown.
The Old Customs House, right?
Old Customs House. It's a lot closer to City Hall than your studio's here, but if I can make it here, I'll make it there. I'm looking forward to it, actually. It's a beautiful museum and a beautiful building.
All right, well, I've got an opportunity right now for callers 7, 8, 9, and 10. You'll get two tickets each to join the mayor and me down there. If you are lucky enough, call 212-268-WABC right now. You'll also qualify to win a trip for two to Aman Resort in Barbados from American Airlines with flights to 35 destinations on 25 memorable islands. Get a great low fare and a lot more airline on American Airlines. And if you don't win on the phone right now, go online to WABCRadio.com. Go to the contest page for the details, brought to you by the Museums of Lower Manhattan. Today's Aetna Pick Bag and 77 WABC.
WABC.
We continue here, Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling at 77 WABC. While I was away, I think it was, you've made some initiatives in the last couple of weeks about those that are needy here in the city, the poor and others, and some initiatives.
We're trying to attack poverty the way we've attacked the problem of not every kid getting a good education or crime. Can you solve all of the problems? No. But you can make a start, and shame on us if we don't. What we did is we put together a group, a very diverse group with lots of different interests, of very smart, hardworking people who volunteered their time. Dick Parsons, who runs Time Warner, and Jeffrey Canada runs a school program. Both great Americans, great New Yorkers, chaired it. And they came up with some recommendations, and then Linda Gibbs, our deputy mayor for social services, pulled together some things that we think are practical. What we're going to try to focus on is a few groups, because you can't do, if you try to do everything all at once, you'll do nothing.
Because you never have enough money to do
right.
it.
Right. So we're trying to focus on a couple of groups. One of the groups that we're focusing on particularly is what's called the working poor. These are people who do what we say, go out and get a job, but they just don't make enough to pay the bills. And so we're trying to help them and to encourage other people. You don't want people to say, oh, look, if I get a job, I won't be able to pay the bills. I'd rather sit here and collect welfare, even though we've reduced
the case.
Even though we reduced welfare rolls and continue to come down, down to as low as they've been since 1964 or something. You want to have people have the incentive to work. It's the right thing to do. It gives them dignity. It sets a role model for their kids that you're going to have to work for a living and should work for a living. So a lot of reasons to do it. But you want to make sure that whatever you do doesn't create the incentive to say, why should I work? So something like one of the things, for example, is a tax credit for child support. Taking care of kids during the day so that you can go out and work. The tax credit's only useful if you're making money, so it's focused on the working poor, but it would make a very big difference in their effective take-home if they didn't have to, or if somebody was helping them pay for child care. We've got a number of things, a couple of which are controversial, but we're going to try some new things. It's one thing that was tried in Mexico to try to encourage people to go to a doctor earlier or kids to go to school. I don't know if it's the right thing or the wrong thing, but I know if we don't try, we're never going to know.
Where do these dollars come from?
We're going to raise private money for the more controversial ones, not because even though you can make the case that the government, if we want to do it, should pay, but it's so controversial, I think we'd be better off raising private money and see if that makes a difference. And the one thing we're going to do is really be rigorous in when we start a program, if it produces results, continue to fund it or enhance it. If it doesn't produce results, stop it, take money away from it. That's very seldom done in government.
It's seldom done in any organization.
I tell you where it's done. It's done in the private sector. In private sector, if you have two product lines, one makes money, one doesn't, you take money away from the one that doesn't and you double up on the one that does. In government, we tend to do the reverse. We take money away from the program that's doing well because nobody's complaining, and we give it to the program that's not doing well and say, oh, it needs more money. If it's not doing well, maybe it doesn't need more money. Maybe it's just a bad idea. And people are always afraid to say, I tried something, it was a bad idea. Come on, let's get serious. Let's try some things. Those things that work, let's enhance them. And those that don't, just cancel them. The trouble is those that don't have hired people and people that work there, they want to keep it going because it's their jobs. That's natural. But from a societal point of view, that's not what you want
to
do.
All right. To that point, the city council says that the food stamp program has money that's not being given away to those that need it in New York City.
Food stamps are a program that's designed to help the working poor. It's for people that are working. And I think we do a pretty good job of getting out the number of people on food stamps up by about a third.
600,000 people are hungry in New York City.
I don't know where any of these numbers come from. I do know that our social service agencies that are in charge of processing and making sure that if you you have to work to get, for generally there's some exceptions, but you have to work to get food stamps. And that's the program. So if people aren't working, they're just not eligible for this. Nobody is starving to death. We do have other programs. But we've got to go and find a ways to help people so that they're not stuck in this endless dependency where they just get something from the government and there's no incentive for them to make their lives better. Everybody, there's nobody that's in trouble that doesn't have multiple problems, so it's marshaling all the resources, better education and social services. If there's some people that have medical problems where we could help and addiction problems we could help. Some people just don't know where to go. We can help there. But you want to have incentives that give people the dignity of a job. That's the fundamentals behind our efforts. And some people say, you're wasting all this money. We are bringing the rolls, welfare rolls down. We have fewer homeless on the street, and more kids are getting an education. So a long ways to go. Crime is down. I mean, all these things are part of the puzzle, and they all seem to be working together. As fast as I'd like, no, but we're going in the right direction.
I know that you saw the numbers today, state education numbers, about third graders doing grade-level work generally around the state, but after that it kind of slides and dips down. In eighth grade, they're just barely making it.
Well, the news is reasonably good for New York, although we certainly have a long, long ways to go. I think that we've got to stay the course here. The rest of the state, I don't know, what's really going on. One of the problems here, John, is the test that you were looking at, the fourth and eighth grade was the same. Fourth and eighth graders, the state tested last year and then this year. Or actually, these tests were taken a year ago, just to show you how old the data is. Tests were taken last fall a year ago, and you're just getting the numbers now. I think Rick Mills has hopes that next year we'll get the data a lot quicker. I've talked to him about it. But the third grade and the fifth grade and the sixth grade and the seventh grade, the state test isn't the same test that the city gave a year earlier, so it's very hard to tell. What is true is that we know that the fourth grade tests were given by the state 2 years ago and last year, eighth grade 2 years ago, last year. What they show in the city is the big gains we made in the fourth grade. We've held those. That's encouraging. and the eighth grade has gotten better this time. Now, the next thing that will be important to see is that this year's tests, which will come out 8-9 months from now, whenever, or maybe in the spring, I hope, because built into those results will be this extra period that we negotiated with the teachers union for the kids most in need, Monday through Thursday, 37 and a half minutes each day, 10 kids or less in the class. And I'm optimistic that that will help us really make a big improvement. And we just won't know until then. But, you know, you can't just look at one set of numbers. But I don't know about the rest of the state. I can only worry about New York City. And the fourth grade tests are comparable. I don't even know if they're exactly the same, but they're comparable. Eighth grade is comparable. The numbers, they're interesting, but they don't tell you anything.
The report card, however, is less than encouraging. We'll have to, as you say, we'll have to see how what the future holds. One of the initiatives that you have been very vocal about, and not only vocal, but you have actually stood up and done something about, gun dealers selling guns in illegal numbers and having them end up...
1% of the gun dealers sell, I don't know, 65% of all of the guns that we get when we arrest somebody for a criminal act.
I understand there was another settlement?
We now have a third of the gun dealers have made a settlement. Two or three more made a settlement. They agree to stop the practice and that sort of thing. Keep in mind, this coming week, Congress is going to vote on a bill. 5092 is the bill which, while we're getting gun dealers to stop, this bill would undermine the Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms Authority to prosecute rogue dealers. And
they're going to pass a bill that would make it easier?
They're going to pass a bill that says if a gun dealer lies in his paperwork, it's okay as long as it's not a big lie. And not only can they lie, they can't be punished for for destroying the evidence. They've got something that if a gun dealer has his license revoked, and you'd have to be really, it's hard to see how anybody would ever have that, they have 60 days to get rid of their inventory.
This is a joke. You're telling
John,
me it's a joke.
This is Congress. You can't make this up.
It's just incomprehensible that Congress, no matter what the pressure, would go to these lengths. They obviously think they're going to sneak this by us.
I don't think they care anymore. I think they're just doing it. The NRA is, you know, out there claiming it's the Second Amendment right. It's not. Nobody's trying to take away people's right to carry a gun. It is, the NRA keeps saying, obey the law. That's what we believe should be done too. And you can't sell guns to convicted felons. You're supposed to do in most states background checks and that sort of thing. What this bill would do is go and help the bad guys. And if somebody gets killed in your district, how are you going to explain if you're the congressman that you voted for a bill that would have gotten that gun off the street? Yeah, one of these bills Congress wants to pass that the ATF will have to turn over all its evidence to rogue dealers prior to a revocation hearing. Dealers don't have to turn over anything to the government, of course. I mean, it's just that there's one part of one of the bills that wants you, if they have any of this information, it's got to be stored only on microfiche.
But you can't even get anymore.
I don't think anybody makes a microfiche reader anymore. Think about what they're doing. This is a day with computers and everything.
It's Alice in Wonderland.
It's Alice in Wonderland, and unless people stand up, it's their kids and themselves and their grandkids that are at risk. And we're not trying to hurt anybody's right to hunt or anything else. It's simply you can't sell guns to people with long rap sheets who want to buy 30 guns all at once. And come on. This is crazy.
Hand me that. I want to see that bit of information. I'm going to follow up on it next week. We need to take a break. When we come back, do you have a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg? 1-800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-WABC. Coming right back. WABC. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. If you've got a question, 1-800-848-WABC.
I've got a question.
Yes, what is that?
My question is, how do we get people to call 311 and schedule an appointment to donate blood?
Well, because I think one of the things is you tell them that it's necessary.
New York Blood Center reports the supply of blood transfusions is actually running perilously low. In August, donor rates in the New York region were 30% below their goal. And unless more New Yorkers donate some blood to raise our supply, surgeries that could save lives might have to be canceled, and hospitals find it more difficult to respond if, God forbid, there really is an emergency.
It's a very easy thing to do.
It's an easy
it's
thing.
Absolutely painless.
Painless, and they always give you, I like the Cheez-Its, and
the Cheez-Its
afterwards.
And the orange juice?
Yeah, not good for my waistline, but I always look forward to that. You know, the only people that can't get blood, if you travel to some countries, then you can't for a couple of years. And I've had that problem of, because I've always tried to be the first one at the blood drive, whether it was my company or City Hall, last couple of years. When I've been traveling, you can't give blood, but I just urge everybody to do it.
311 or call the New York Blood Center. They'll be able to help you out as well. You want to go to the phones here? 1-800-848-WABC.
Why don't we try Craig?
Craig, you've got the mayor. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Bloomberg, it's nice to talk to you. You've done a great job for New York City, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I live in Nassau County, and I heard you talk about the United Nations and how much money it brings in for the city, but as far as the federal budget goes, it's about 22%, I think I heard yesterday, of our federal budget goes towards the United Nations.
No,
and that comes out of everybody's tax dollars, not just the New York City people. So how is that benefiting me if I don't live in the city? And I'll hang up and let you answer the question. I don't mean to be argumentative with you. I'm just asking a question. Okay,
okay, thank you. Appreciate
thank you, Greg.
You want?
Well, it's not 22% of the budget. It might be 22% of the UN's budget that we pay.
Yeah, I think
for.
That is it. Because of the size, we're supposed to pay, although they would argue we haven't paid our bills. But we pay a portion of the UN's budget. But, Craig, in terms of the country's foreign aid and the percentage of the country's budget, it's minuscule. You couldn't even measure it. You know, Nassau County does benefit, incidentally, because a lot of the diplomats who are assigned to the embassies at the United Nations that are here because of the United Nations live in Nassau County and spend money there in the stores and restaurants and have houses and employ construction workers. So it's a regional thing. It's not just New York City, and Nassau County certainly benefits. You know, as you go further away, Suffolk, or start to go north of Westchester or way out into Connecticut or New Jersey, then the effect, clearly, the farther away you get, more it diminishes. But Nassau is a big beneficiary, Craig, of it. And, you know, as I said before, I don't agree with the things said at the UN, but I do like the fact that they're spending the money while they're saying it here. And if they're going to say the same stuff overseas and other people are going to get the money, doesn't make it any better what they say.
You want to try Keith in Orange County?
Absolutely.
All right, Keith, you've got the mayor, and you've got about 30 seconds. Go.
Okay, real quick, Mr. Mayor. You stated earlier about the firearms dealers doing background checks in most states. It's federal law since 98, I believe, that every gun transfer from a FFL holder, licensed dealer, to an individual needs to go through the federal background check.
Keith, there are places like gun shows where they don't do it, but even so, I don't disagree with you at all. They should. What we're complaining about are dealers who don't, and we have on film a bunch of dealers who literally didn't do it. And if they obeyed the laws, we don't have a problem. I'm not against guns. I'm not against the Second Amendment. I'm not against hunting. I think that should be up to individuals. The Constitution protects you, and common sense says protect you. All I'm trying to do is to keep gun dealers from selling guns to people they know are buying them for criminal activity. If somebody buys 30 pistols all at once, it isn't that they're going hunting. If they buy bullets that are advertised as armor-piercing, last time I saw a deer wearing a bulletproof vest was a long time ago. Come on, that's what the only thing we're complaining about. So you and I really aren't on different sides of this.
Speaking of going, we have to go. The music is up. Mr. Mayor, Happy New Year.